You are listening to the Prison Voices Project, a radio storytelling project exploring the prison system by highlighting the voices of those most impacted by prisons. The Prison Voices Project airs on WGXC 90.7 FM Hands-On Community Radio on the first Wednesday of the month from 2 to 3 p.m. You can contact the Prison Voices Project at 704 Columbia Street, 2nd floor, Hudson, New York, 12534.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart.
Hello and welcome to the Prison Voices Project. Today we have an incredible show about the war on drugs and the event that will be held tomorrow, November 8th, Thursday, at Time and Space Limited in Hudson, which explores this topic through a panel, which will start at 6:30 p.m., followed by a movie screening of the film The House I Live In. Linda Mussman of TSL and public advocate Quentin Cross are organizers of the event, and today's show will feature an interview with them about the war on drugs and the impact that the war on drugs is having on Hudson, Columbia County, and beyond. Before we go on to our feature, I would like to acknowledge the handful of people that the Prison Voices Project received mail from over the last month. The important topics that people addressed included issues of those serving sentences because of their association with others who committed crimes, the felony murder rule, the nature of crimes as the determining factor in parole hearings, which was last month's Prison Voices Project show, which was discussed with Judith Brink of the Prison Action Network. That show is available on our archives at wgxc.org. You can go to archives and look at past shows of the Prison Voices Project. So all of the input was very helpful and will definitely be considered for future shows on the Prison Voices Project here on WGXC 90.7 FM. Today's show is on the war on drugs, so I thought it would be appropriate to share an excerpt from one of the letters that I received from the Shawanagunk Correctional Facility. This is a letter written to Governor Cuomo, of which I received a copy. Sir, my name is Larry Comfort. I am serving 21 and one-half years to life for first-degree possession and sale of 13 ounces of cocaine and attempted escape. Please allow me to tell you my story, and many incarcerated veterans have the same story as mine. At 19 years of age, I joined the United States Marine Corps. 4 months later, after basic training, I was in Vietnam stationed to the 1st Reconnaissance Battalion, 1st Marines in Da Nang. From the tragedies I experienced at war, like so many other young men, I got involved in drugs to numb myself, and for that I am ashamed. I came home with an honorable discharge, however I was a mess mentally. I stayed involved in drugs, I received a few jobs, I got married, became a father, and became a failure as a husband and a father. I could not hold down a job, and I could not follow the laws of society because of my drug involvement. From the time I came home until the onset that landed me in prison on this crime on December 5th, 1980, I sold drugs at a small level to pay for my drug use and to help pay my bills. Sir, since I have been incarcerated, I have reconstructed myself because of the programs I took that the DOCS offers. I have completed all the required programs and more. And I have taught most of the programs. I have been attending AA for nearly 25 years, and I have been clean and sober since 10/14/88. Praise God. I have been before the Board of Parole 9 times, 6 appearances, and 3 court-ordered new hearings. I continue to be denied parole because of the nature of my crime. The nature of my crime will never change. However, I have changed. If released, I plan to attend 3 residential programs at the Montrose Veterans Center. That will take 6 months to complete and allow me to work my way into a community as a taxpayer and an asset to society. I often wonder how my life would have turned out had I not went to Vietnam. However, I am proud that I fought for my country and would do it again. Sir, there are a lot of incarcerated war veterans just like me who would love to have an opportunity to be a member of a community and grateful taxpayers. Please consider my requests. Thank you. Sincerely, Larry Comfort. If you are just tuning in, you are listening to the Prison Voices Project on WGXC 90.7 FM, hands-on community radio for Greene and Columbia counties. Today's program is on the war on drugs, and we are joined by organizers of a panel event that will take place tomorrow evening at Time and Space Limited, preceding a screening of the highly acclaimed film The House I Live In. Let's begin with the trailer of The House I Live In, written, directed, and produced by Eugene Jarecki.
You have to understand the war on drugs has never been about drugs.
America's public enemy number one is drug abuse.
What will you do when someone offers you drugs?
We intend to end the drug menace and to eliminate this dark, evil enemy within.
Put him away. Put him away where they
belong. 3 strikes and you are out.
Somebody down the road said drugs are bad. Okay, there's no argument there. But think about where we are 30 years later.
I do what I have to do. I know how to survive.
Yeah, I got some weed, too.
Don't let him run.
The war against drugs is heating up.
I think they should have wrote prison guard on my forehead when I was born because it just fits me.
I say he's a criminal. Let him go to prison.
I have a life and 30-year sentence.
20 years for drug trafficking.
I have life without parole for 3 ounces of methamphetamine.
Of the 2,600 people I've sent to federal prison, I've seen 3 or 4 kingpins. We're incarcerated poor people who are drug addicts.
You're watching poor, uneducated people be fed into a machine like meat to make sausage.
Law enforcement agencies get rewarded in cash for the sheer numbers of drug arrests.
That money's ours now. That's my money now.
The scale is unbelievable.
Nobody jails their population at the rate that we do.
All sorts of people get a financial interest.
Taser gun manufacturers, healthcare providers, phone companies.
You build a bed, they fill the bed. And you'll get rich, and we'll get rich, and we'll all be rich together.
Engage in a great experiment. What happens when you take large numbers of people, remove them from their neighborhoods, their families?
What y'all getting them for?
What does this do to the broader community?
The drug war is a Holocaust in slow motion.
This is a war on all Americans. I think people keep saying, well, that's about them. Well, no, it's about you.
You were just listening to the trailer of The House I Live In, written, directed, and produced by Eugene Jarecki. This film will be showing tomorrow evening at Time and Space Limited at 434 Columbia Street in Hudson, New York. Preceding the film, there will be a panel discussion about the war on drugs. The panelists will include Alice Green, who's a PhD and executive director of Albany's Center for Law and Justice, as well as Derek Anderson and Cedric Fulton, who spent 30 and 17 years in prison, respectively, for drug-related crimes. Recently, both have been released and are eager to talk about their experiences before, during, and after incarceration. I was able to sit down with the two organizers of the event, Linda Mussman of TSL and public advocate Quentin Cross. And now, I will share with you excerpts from their interviews. I began by asking them why they chose to organize this event in Hudson.
My name is Linda Mussman. I'm co-director of Time and Space Limited, your neighbor right down the street.
Well, TSL has been located in this community for 20 plus years, and we are on the north side of the community, and we have been, many of our neighbors, our friends face these issues all the time. I've gone to court, I've helped people address some of the issues around incarceration. So there's a lot of issues that we've seen up close in our community of Hudson, which I think reflects really what's going on in many communities across America, and particularly in communities that don't have jobs, that have poor education. I think our school reflects many of the kids fail here, 50% don't graduate. What is their future? And these are issues that have all been at our front door at TSL. So we've been very lucky in many ways to be an arts organization which has deep roots in a community that in many ways is at risk. SWAT teams hit doors, which are my neighbor's doors, and this is brutal. And policemen here carry laser guns, and they are used and abused, in my view, which is a very difficult argument to have when people are struggling to find a way to make a living and are at the mercy of the police. And it is money that keeps flowing into our communities, and there's no stimulus package that's come to address the real issues, which is education, employment, and the sort of disparity in who gets what here. And I don't think we're unusual. I don't think Hudson's particularly like, oh, wow, this is just a Hudson problem. This is a problem, I think, across America. How do we avoid the using drugs, which avoids going to prison, ultimately, if this is the game? And the game is about how it tangles us in a system we can't get out of, and we need help. Many people have been harmed, you know, without a doubt, for life, through this sort of targeting a group of people and creating a tangle and a web that, honestly, many people can't even get out of. You know, we have millions of people in prison. We're a country that has put far too many people in jail, and many are African Americans.
Good morning. My name is Quentin Cross, and I am a community advocate. And how I got involved is Linda Musman is a great friend of mine, and we're grassroots, and we tend to do all the quirky things in the town that nobody else would do. And I'm a former public official. I'm an addict in recovery, and I'm a former ward of the state, inmate number 088-2916. So I understand the struggle, and you know, I want to take this time to give a shout-out to all my brothers and sisters in the struggle. My friends at Downstate, I have some friends in Bedford Hills, Bear Hill, and my last jail that was at Mount McGregor, who I continue to try to encourage, because it's a battle out here. And when you talk about the war on drugs and those who have been affected and have gone through being sentenced under drug laws to come home, it's very hard. Many people may not know that when you have a drug offense, you cannot come home and live in public housing. So that's the first barrier. So where do you live? Secondly, if you try to go to school, you have to go in front of a panel because they probably think that you're going to take your student loan money and flip it. And so all these barriers, barriers to employment, a lot of people going at a young age, they come out, maybe they get their GED, maybe they don't, but they start from nothing and they have nothing and they have no resources, so to speak. And in this community, there's absolutely nothing. We have no grassroots. We have no advocacy. We have no legal aid, no Center for Law and Justice, no NAACP. We have nothing here. So you come into this community, you go homeless and, you know, just wait to be violated and go back to prison, because that's the reality of what we face in this community. So I decided to get involved, and I decided to reach out to some of my friends who I did time with, and some people who know about this a lot more than me, some who were sentenced under Rockefeller and did, you know, 17 years, you know, a hell of a lot of time for selling drugs, and to try to get to the root of the problem, because we're losing a lot of black men in this community. In our community, we've lost a couple generations, and it's just stagnant. They're just sitting around. They're looking for somebody to give hope, and I felt that these discussions may bring hope, because there's a new class of people here in this community that I believe could be helpful, and sort of understands, but we got to bring it to them and see if they could help us really become a community and lift people up. Well, the Rockefeller drug laws, as people know, were, you know, laws put in place that, you know, had very harsh sentences for crack cocaine, and most people who sold crack cocaine were African American. You know, what I know of it, I was actually in prison when the Rockefeller drug laws changed. That was in 2009, I believe. And I was up there, and it was so many people. The vast amount of people that were in the law libraries at that time would be astounding to any community. Like, many people got sentenced under Rockefeller. And then you got to look at the back end. How much was their parole when they got out? You know, they might have had a one to life and went home and came back on a violation. And, you know, then they do 15 years. And, you know, because a lot of them had, you know, life on the back end. And it was a, it basically decimated communities. You know, I'm a product of a father who sold drugs, was not around when I was younger, and had the sense, although it was detrimental to me, to when he got out of jail, he said, I need to get out of New York State and go home to North Carolina, because this system up here, you know, I would get lost. You know, he left. He was a smart one, but I was left here. And that happens all every day, all day. People, families are left. You know, they're in prison and we're on the streets, and we don't have that role model or the person to look up to. And all we look at is the people making money, because that's the easy way. That's what we see. You know, we want the Jordans and we want the best coats and things of that nature. So, to be honest with you, drug dealing is the fast and easy way. How do we change that mindset is, you know, where I'm at, what I'm working on, because they're using these drug laws to kill us off, and there's no change coming. There's nothing, nobody's talking about prevention and things of that nature. Rockefeller changed many of, you know, the parameters, how you can deal with somebody. You can call them in now and give, you know, alternatives to incarceration. Well, we're in a Republican county. That matters. Most people may not think it matters. They're not into alternatives to incarceration. It's just their philosophy. You have to respect their philosophy. I would probably go on record as saying that if you look at Democratic counties in this state compared to Republican counties, there's more people in Democratic counties getting alternatives. In this county, your alternative is go to prison. You know, we'll see you when you get back. And nobody's talking about the root issues. Maybe we should get this person some help. Maybe we should do the three-legged stool, housing, employment, education. You know, that's the Father Peter Young model. We have no reentry task force, so people are just, you know, come on out. Then you have to find a job. That parole said you got to find a job. You got to be gainfully employed. You got to go to all the meetings, parole said, and you got to find housing. How do you do that when your only housing you're going to find in this community that you could afford is public housing, and you can't go into public housing, you know? And that's where we at. These are some of the issues that need to be addressed here, and that's why it's important that we have discussions like this, because out of these discussions come so much more things that people may not understand. You know, I fight for affordable housing because the housing here, you know, may be affordable for me, but it's not affordable for that person, you know, with a couple kids and their husband or wife's in prison or just coming home. It's not affordable. So if it's not affordable, that means they come home and they sell drugs, and then there's more crime, and then they, you know, the quality of life comes down. So we have to find something so people can grab hold to and feel good about themselves. I always want to work. It makes me feel good about myself. I want my own house. It makes me feel good about myself. How do we help? You know, it's not a handout, it's a hand up. How do we give a hand up? drugs lead to crime, lead to so many other things. I've been there. I know. I was a drug addict. I understand. But more police is not the way. It's maybe more social workers, maybe more drug counselors, maybe more employment specialists, maybe more jobs, you know, more youth programs. That's a community situation. Law enforcement, they have their role. The community is a broader, has a broader role, and that's to help each other out. And putting more cops on the streets just gets this city and in most cities throughout the nation more in debt. You know, we don't need as many cops as they have on the street. But I went through it. I've lived it. I met a lot of good people, a lot of people. It changed my view on prison. And, you know, so I met people who did some heinous things, but I believe they should be given another opportunity. After 30 years, I think you should, after 20 years, after even 15, after 5, you know, you should be given a second chance. I don't care what you do. I know, you know, I don't diminish, you know, the crimes or the impact it had on the victims, but I think that people should be given opportunities. And I know in this county, in a lot of ways, that people who sell drugs do more time than some people do who do heinous crimes. I know I did 3 years for grand larceny for a dirty urine. I got resentenced to prison, and there were many sex offenders who ruined kids' lives who did 1 year, 2 year, did much less time than me. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't have, but it doesn't, you know, victimless crime, it's all these things. And a lot of it just boils down to race, in my opinion. You know, drugs is not a racial issue, but the sentencing of people boils down to, you know, your background, where you come from.
So until we sort of resolve how we think about things and the value that we place on people, I think this is where we have to sort of start over. How do we invest in our young people? How do we reorganize our thinking and value our neighbors instead of saying we don't want to deal with the African-American community? We don't want to deal with other. We don't want to deal with single mothers. We don't want to deal with kids who fail. Reality is it's gaining, you know, the problems are gaining on us. And to not deal with it is going to bankrupt our place. I mean, we have to change it. I don't see the governor really helping us. Maybe he wants to, but I think he can't. I think it has to come from the grassroots. It always comes from the bottom up. And I think the bottom, we're nearly there. So I think this is the beginning of a change. And not the beginning, but an ongoing steps. And I think people like Quentin are the leaders that are going to change it. So I'm looking forward to it.
Drugs oppress the people every day.
Selling dope, serving weed. We had to hustle just to eat.
Ain't no hope in the streets, you broke, you sell dope. All my young niggas outside hustling coke. Know the drama, if you ain't selling crack, then it's ganja. I've been through it, done. Hitting niggas 2 for 1, pulling guns out and busting my shits too. What? I ain't give a fuck. I used to get a rush when I bust mine. Bagging up my nickels and dime, going through difficult time. Writing my life story in rhyme, but when I look at all the niggas, they hit with mad time. In proportion to the big kingpins, it don't fit. You could get caught with barely a half a slab. And the judge sentenced you like you ran the app. I ain't plan to get rich from selling that shit. It was survival. My game plan was not to get knocked by 5-0. But who am I? Just a young nigga caught in the mix. And if this weed don't sell, I'ma cop me a brick.
Selling dope, serving weed. We had to hustle just to eat. Selling dope, serving weed.
Just to eat. It's been a minute since
since I've been in the game. Some years back, I held crack, I couldn't say the same thing. Asked my nigga Bang Double in Raleigh, we was trouble, got the fiend spot, bubbling hot. We wouldn't never make a lot, I mean, not like Scarface, or Nino Brown, or George Bush. No matter what you pushed, it was politics and camera tricks, very deceptive. Criminalize us and fooling the collective for the most part. We don't know no folks in planes, we just copy from Poppy, bag it in the cellophane. It's a family thing, you got to hustle all night. Yo, I seen fiends losing their brains for hard white. Ask my aunt and my brother and my stressed out mother how realistic it gets. It's sadistic, statistics show it's sick how we living. The one thing bigger than dope games is prisons. 1 million niggas inside, over 3 million is tied. But the president lied because the White House is the Rock House. Uncle Sam the pusher man, this is for my people on the island.
Serving we had to hustle just to eat. Selling dope, serving weed,
selling weed.
We had to hustle just to eat. But what we gonna do when we caught up and have to face responsibility?
This not ghetto shit. This not ghetto shit.
What we gon' do when we caught up and have to face responsibility?
This that ghetto shit. This that ghetto.
Out on the block, white t-shirt, army fatigues. Niggas hold crack in their mouth watching for deeds. Selling dope, you know how it be. Trying to get that government cheese. And the D's yell please. Selling dope, white t-shirt, army fatigues. Niggas hold crack in their mouth watching for deeds. Selling dope, you know how it be. Trying to get that government cheese and the
free. Hello, you are listening to the Prison Voices Project, and I'm your host, Corey Fisher Hoffman. You have been listening to Selling Dope by Dead Prez, and before that, you heard the first part of my interview with Linda Mussman and Quentin Cross. They are organizers of an upcoming event taking place tomorrow evening, November 8th, which is Thursday, at 6:30 p.m. at Time and Space Limited at 434 Columbia Street. There will be a panel where panelists who include Alice Green, PhD Executive Director of Albany's Center for Law and Justice, Derek Anderson, and Cedric Fulton, who spent 30 and 17 years respectively in prison for drug-related crimes, will speak about the war on drugs before showing the film The House I Live In, written, directed, and produced by Eugene Jarecki, which is a new film on the war on drugs. I've seen the trailer. It looks incredible. In the following segment of this interview with Linda Mussman and Quentin Cross, the two of them discuss the connections between Jim Crow segregation, slavery, and the prison system. This connection is something that has become much more widely discussed since Michelle Alexander published her book, The New Jim Crow, Colorblindness in the Age of Mass Incarceration. So here we go. This is part two of my interview with Linda Mussman and Quentin Cross. You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. This is the Prison Voices Project.
People were arrested for vagrancy laws because they didn't have a job. Then they went to jail to pay off their crime. They often worked for the plantation again. I mean, we're back in this sort of plantation mental condition. More police. Let's get rid of the people we don't want to deal with. And the best way to do that is put them in jail. And that group, you know, tends to be put in a large, system of how people are talked about, but in reality, no one's really talking about who those people are and why they went to jail and who they were selling drugs to. And it was not the drug kingpins that are sitting in jail. It's the little guys and women who are selling small things. And those laws created harsh punishments, which don't stop because there is parole, probation, and on and on and on. And you are trapped in a system that you can't get out of.
In regards to my time incarcerated, it was the new Jim Crow at work. I believe in New York State, one of the requirements is that you have to attend programs and you have to work. So, okay, if I committed a crime and I'm coming to, do time, you know, or be rehabilitated, you know, why do I have to do all these additional things? So, for instance, me, somebody who, you know, who had an education, who had a background, I was paid $15.15 every 2 weeks to run transitional services. People upstate, I know you know what it is. I ran orientation and phase one. And I mean, I ran it. I did the payroll. I did all the hiring. I did all the paperwork. I did everything while somebody sat there and made $60,000 to watch me do all the work, you know. And then you have the people out there working in the mess hall, and you got the people working in these communities that, you know, can care less about them, but you're helping build their roads and you're cleaning up their debris, and you got people have to keep the facility up, making, you know, 15 cents or whatever it is. But it's just a mill. We keep, you know, we can't sit idle. You have to do something. You either work or you go to the box. So it is. It's slavery. That's what it boils down to. Now, don't get me wrong. Okay, it empowers you. Working is good. That's what they say. But if you sent me to jail for a crime that I did, why can't I just do my time? Why can't I sit in my bunk and just, you know, sit there? You can't do that in New York State. If you ain't an old person or you don't have medical, you got to work. You got to attend program. They get federal money for ASAT. So everybody, even if you had to, you know, use drugs back in the 20s and you went to prison and you say you've used drugs before, they put you in ASAT because they get federal money. They make you go through this program. And if you don't complete this program, 9 times out of 10, you can't make your board. So I recommend to people, when you come in, and you go do your pre-sentencing investigation, say you don't use drugs, because once you say you use drugs, you open up all these doors for programs you have to take on the inside. They have a program for everything, and they're all funded through the federal or different, you know, they're making money off of it. The correction officers act like slave owners. That's a fact. They act like slave. Every correction officer that I've ran into, with the exception of one who I knew personally before this, whenever they see me, they get up out of the restaurant and leave. If you have to get up out of a restaurant or a public place and leave, you know you aren't acting with any type of an integrity or respect. It's a tough job, but they take it out on people. They beat people.
Yo. You know, it's kind of crazy, man. Yo, I was building with my mans, right? Yo, he had just came home, right? He was like, yo, incarceration, that's the new plantation. A new kind of slavery, a new foundation. And it would even cost you much. The project is a slave ship. The corner is the auction block.
Yo, hold up, son. Yo, I was like, yo, you can't be serious, right? He was like, yo, son.
Police officers enlisting the overseers. We victims of a quicker system that's meant to defeat us. Get rich, some snitch, and it's just the start. Forefathers sold off their own flesh and blood. We on the bus up north, of course it's the middle passage. Why else you think they shackle and chain us and call us savage? The state penitentiary, century slave quarters. The warden is the master, the fortune to take orders. So they call it solitary confinement inside a hole. Similar to slavery, life without parole. And we still treat it less, 3/5 a human being. Cause the new plantation is owned by Europeans.
What they do has already been done. When they come home, you better find out. People just wanna be free, just wanna be free. Not to be new under the sun. What they do has already been done. When you come home, you better run. People just wanna be free, just wanna be free.
Incarceration is the new plantation. A new kind of slavery, a new foundation. We hating in courts cause often it's no justice. The same courts they auction our ancestors.
Yo, slow down. Yo, I don't think these dudes understand it.
They repeating the cycle off a crack to the youth. On the news, hanging loose from a platinum noose. A whole generation seems to forgotten. Modern day plantation where the inmates is picking their cotton. Then they traded their whips for their clubs and batons. X changing the chains for the cuffs in your arms. But still, got to keep all of the dogs and the guns. Just in case a nigga wanna be thinking, you gotta be free? Yo, that's just a modern day lynching. Stuck in a gas chamber, so you die slow. That's for the black and brown folks on death row who never had a shot cause the system is garbage.
It's not the new one of the sun.
what they do has already been done. When they come up, you better mind. People just wanna be free, just wanna be free.
In the spirit of the ancestors. And the spirit of any being done off the fathers,
when they come upon, you better run.
And the spirit
of
all those who that run. Mumia, Abu Jamal, Hassan, Shakur, Tony, Abuno, Randy, Arroyo, Kenneth, Foster, yeah, never forget you.
That was The New Plantation by The Welfare Poets. Hello, you are listening to the Prison Voices Project on WGXC 90.7 FM, Hudson, Acre, Catskill, Green, and Coxsackie. Today's program is about the war on drugs. In this final segment of my interview with Linda Mussman of Time and Space Limited in Hudson and public advocate Quentin Cross, they address the impact of the war on drugs in Hudson and the need to make local and national change. You can join in on this conversation by attending a film screening of this new documentary, The House I Live In, and the panel discussion that will precede it. Tomorrow evening, Thursday, November 8th, at 6:30, this panel discussion on the war on drugs and its impact on our community and across the USA will feature Alice Green, Executive Director of Albany's Center for Law and Justice. She recently released two reports named What Have We Done? Mass Incarceration and the Targeting of Albany's Black Males by Federal, State, and Local Authorities. These reports describe the alarming overrepresentation of minorities in the Capital Region criminal and juvenile justice systems, the disproportionate impact of the criminal system of children of color in the Capital Region, is the other name of her study. In this third and final report, the center documents the devastation wrought by recent arrest sweeps conducted in Albany minority communities by federal, state, and local authorities. In addition to Alice Green, Derek Anderson and Cedric Fulton, who spent 30 and 17 years, respectively, in prison for drug-related crimes, will also join the panel. They have both been recently released from prison, and they're eager to talk about their experiences before, during, and after incarceration. This panel will be moderated by Linda Mussman, and it's free to the public. So this is an incredible event taking place tomorrow evening, starting at 6:30. The panel discussion will begin, and it's wonderful that this will be talked about here in Hudson, but also really that there are such experts coming to join in on the conversation. So you're welcome to join in, and you will be joining in to speak with experts, people who have really experienced the impact of the war on drugs in their own personal lives. Following the panel discussion, The House I Live In, which is written, directed, and produced by Eugene Jarecki, will play at Time and Space Limited, which is at 434 Columbia Street. So this movie says here, as America remains embroiled in conflicts overseas, a less visible war is taking place at home, costing countless lives, destroying families, and inflicting untold damage upon future generations of Americans. In 40 years, the war on drugs has accounted for more than 45 million arrests, made America the world's largest jailer, and damaged poor communities at home and abroad. Yet for all that, drugs are cheaper, purer, and more available than ever before. Filmed in more than 20 states, this film captures heart-wrenching stories from individuals at all levels of America's drug war. From the dealer to the grieving mother, the narcotics officer to the senator, the inmate to the federal judge, the film offers a penetrating look inside America's longest war, a definitive portrait revealing its profound human rights implications. So this movie will be shown tomorrow at 8 p.m. at Time and Space Limited, and it will be preceded by a panel discussion at 6:30. So, with no further ado, here is the final segment of my interview with organizers of this event, Quentin Cross and Linda Mussman. Thank you so much for tuning into the Prison Voices Project here on WGXC 90.7 FM, hands-on community radio for Green and Columbia counties.
Our police department expands here in Hudson, New York. It's over $3 million. Of a $12 million budget, that's a tremendous amount of money being spent on police and patrolling, and in reality, it is not addressing the real issues, in my mind, what I see up close in my community regarding what happens to the young kids, and particularly the African-American community, which is, you know, front and center of who gets targeted. Well, there's a something used in our community called PINS, Persons in Need of Supervision. And these are when, let's say, my young son is late for school too many times, and referrals are given to those to my child. And my child gets enough referrals that creates an opportunity for the school to offer a PINS petition. They say, Johnny, Joe, Mary, they're just having a hard time. Maybe we can help you by having the state come on into your house. Right? Well, I think if you really thought about that, having the state, having to sit in front of the same judges who are sitting in our county courts, such as, you know, are listening to serious criminal cases, family court cases, are now really going to be passing judgment on your child. And putting that, they have a parole officer, they have to meet certain guidelines, and the families also are at risk when you go down that road, because you, if you fail to do some of the things that PINS petitions suggest that you do, you also could end up in jail as a parent. I think they're vicious. I think they are the last thing that should be done to a child in this community, and in many ways the school offering that opportunity to families is totally cynical in my view. And should be, really, there should be warnings to the community, like, don't agree to PINS. Don't agree to go in front of the courts to settle an issue. Let's figure out ways that the community can create advocacy, or big brothers, big sisters, big mothers, fathers, etc., to come on in and sort of try to figure out how to stay out of the system. Because from PINS, often children are then, you know, you create a juvenile delinquency record, and then you're picked up and you have a PINS petition and you become entangled in a system that, you know, frankly, is not supportive.
It's troubling. And so for me, my message would be, we have to limit people's going to prison. We have to limit, you know, young people. I dealt with a lot of young people in Mount McGregor because I ran that, and I was the chairman of the inmate liaison committee, so I represented the inmates to the administration at that facility. But the young people, many of the young people that I was involved in, you know, they had no father figure, they had no education, they were gang related, and they had no hope coming in. We built them up in Mount McGregor. Mount McGregor is a very special, it's a unique prison. We built them up in that prison. We got them into, you know, inmate-run programs like emotional intelligence and criminal thinking and seven habits and things of that. And we built them up, but we forget that they still have to go back into those same neighborhoods, because parole dictates that you go back to the county of your crime. I was just at the county jail, you know, for another incident, and they say, we think Quentin Cross is a racist. Everybody who come out, they say I'm a racist. But actually, I'm just a little bitter. I'm not, it's nothing to do with race, because you're white or whatever. I've been bitter at authority going through this, because there's no change. I was in a county jail where every day, all the young kids did, they have all these juveniles in there, real juveniles in there beating each other up. And what are you doing? Like, is there no program for them? Where's the program? They're juveniles. They're not 18. They're not 19. Well, they're under 19. And they're in there. They're beating themselves up. You're pulling the pin every 5 minutes. You got to go down there. But you're not putting anything constructive there. So in my mind, I feel like you want the system to work in this way. That's why I get mad. I look, and I have not seen any. I don't differentiate. You want the system to work this way because, okay, I met you, you know, in 2008. I come through in 2012, and I just met your son. So, okay, that's how it works. Oh, so I understand. That's how you want it to, but it's time for a change. Around here and through the nation, over 2 million people incarcerated. These families are decimated. We need to think about the families. People talk about, we're all about community, about one nation and coming together. Families need to be together. They need two people making an income in order to survive. They need people instilling the things that I instill into my twin 5-year-old daughters, because I'm there as a man. This is what's going to happen in your life. This is what a man will do. Because that matters. Because, you know, I can tell them straight up, like, okay, this is how a guy is going to come at you, because this is how I would. But don't do it. You don't want to be a parent at 14 years old. And because as if you're a parent at 14 years old, like my mom, you won't get to where you want to until you're 30. It happens. I've been there. I've seen it. And it's just a repeating cycle. And these conversations, like the one we're having at TSL, you know, shed some light on it. And maybe a little light, a little bit of light here, there, everywhere, becomes a whole sunshine at the end of the day.
Thank you. The drug war is the discussion we should be having. And I think continuing it and bringing people onto the stage and shedding the light, and as Quentin has said, to show what the outcome of our bad policies have given us. You know, we've ruined people's lives. We've made no opportunities available. We've cut education. We cut Pell Grants. We cut. And how long do you cut until there's a revolution? And maybe this is the beginning of the revolution. So this, I'm very hopeful. I think the house I live in, again, movies make a difference. People get a chance to see. It's personal. It's political. It's clearly a visual view, and it doesn't attempt to address it. All of it. It shows the impacts. There are mothers in prison. There are children who are products of people who are in prison. Who deals with those children? How do they actually get a chance to not go down that road? The November event, we'll have two people who've served a tremendous amount of time, Derek Anderson, who was in jail for 30 years, and Cedric Fulton from this community, 17 years for drug-related crimes. Alice Green, tremendous amount of information. What's going on in Albany related to the new Jim Crow, which is who's in jail and what for.
Let's start with this. Let this be the conversation, the war on drugs, because it is having a devastating effect. And I just see so many people not doing, you know, you go in for drugs or you're a drug addict and you come home, and I'm the first to admit, I was home for about 4 months and I went to rehab. At least I had sense to go into rehab because it was just too much. It was too many. He wanted too much of me, too much. And I knew the system well enough to know that if I went to rehab, I could get, because they wouldn't let me leave Columbia County either. And I didn't want to be here. But I knew I had sense enough to know that if I went to rehab in Albany, they could say that he needs to stay here. And that's what happened. And then once I was in Albany for a while and got my confidence back, I was able to come back to Hudson and be all right. And that's what it was. A lot of people come out and you're gloomy. You're depressed. Things aren't the same. You know, your baby mama with somebody else, or your baby daddy here. And, you know, you when you're in jail, everything in prison, you're in your own world. Everything stops. And you think things are changing because you're changing and you're growing. And you come out and shit is the same. You know, they may not be doing coke, they're doing heroin now. They may not be doing heroin, they're doing crack. Or now everybody's doing pills. That's their thing. And, you know, I, for one, always want people to look at my example, look what I had to go through publicly, and use that as a means to not doing it. That doesn't work. So we got to do some face-to-face. We got to really bring it to them. And that's where I'm at. And this is what I love to do, and this is what I'm going to school for. And I can be of any help. That's what I want to do. So shout out to the brothers and sisters in the struggle again. Thank you.
Buscando marihuana, policías en las calles, más brutalidad. Policías en helicóptero, oh no, buscando marihuana, policías en las calles, más brutalidad.
Son policías, espías, pitufos del sistema, proteger al pueblo. pueblo dicen es su lema, servir y cuidarnos de los malos, traer a nuestras calles paz y evitarnos daños, pero llevamos años soportando la opresión, les das la espalda y abren fuego a discreción, analfabeta, cargando una escopeta, esposas y un tolete, no sabes ni hablar, pero muestras tu placa para que se te respete, es la pandilla uniformada más grande de la historia, el servicio de gobierno sin memoria, escoria, cuidan narcos y asesinos, reprimen manifestaciones enviados por los pinos.
Policías en helicóptero, buscando marihuana, policías en las calles, más brutalidad. Policías en helicóptero, oh no, buscando marihuana, policías en las calles, más brutalidad.
De lo mismo, policías corruptos, nepotismo, mordidas, extorsión, alzan las manos, dicen que esto es una revisión sin justificación, quiero ver tu identificación, dime qué traes encima, te ves muy sospechoso, parado en esa esquina, vamos camina, dormirás en los separos, malditos puertos y sirenas, las noches en el barrio ya no son amenas, tampoco para los hermanos que cruzan fronteras, la migra, muros y la Guardia Nacional, matan migrantes y parece tan normal. Asesinos, no necesitamos opresión, presos políticos, liberación, revolución para el sistema judicial mal manejado, y en el juzgado un abogado que es pagado por lo que llaman estado delincuente, si lo matan accidentes, si lo atrapan eficientes, si no encuentran culpable lo fabrican y nos quitan nuestra libertad de gritar, ya no más brutalidad, inconformidad ante la represión, el pueblo unido jamás será vencido, amigo, testigo, pregunta. Pregúntaselo a Tempo, estamos contigo. Prohibido olvidar quién es el enemigo verdadero. Policías, empresarios y políticos ateros.
Policías en helicóptero, buscando marihuana. Policías en las calles, más brutalidad. Policías en helicóptero, oh no, buscando marihuana. Policías en las calles, más brutalidad. Policías en helicóptero, oh no, buscando marihuana. Policías en las calles, más brutalidad. Policías en helicóptero, oh no, buscando marihuana. Policías en las calles.
This talk of getting old is getting me down, my love, like a cat in a bag waiting to drown. This time I'm coming down, and I know you're thinking of me as you lay down on your side. Now the drugs don't work, they just make you worse. But I know I see your face again. Now the drugs don't work, they just make you worse. But I know I see your face again. But I know I'm on a losing streak as I pass down by your old street. And if you wanna show, just let me know and I'll sing in your ear again. Now the drugs don't work, they just make you worse. But I know I see your face again. So baby, ooh, if heaven calls, I'm coming too, just like make you sad. If you leave my life, I'm better off dead. All this talk of getting old is getting me down, my Lord, like a cat in a bag, waiting to drown. This time I'm coming down. Drugs don't work, they just make you worse. But I know I see your face again. So baby, ooh, if heaven calls, I'm coming too. And like you said, if you leave my life, I'm better off dead. But if you wanna show, just let me know and I'll sing in your ear again. Now the drugs don't work, they just make you worse. But I know I see your face again. Yeah, I know I see your face again. Yeah, I know I see your face again. Oh Lord. Yeah, I know I see your face again. Never coming down, never coming down. No more, no more, no more, no more, no more. Never coming down, never coming down, down. No more, no more, no more. Oh Lord. Yeah, I know I see your face again.
You have been listening to the Prison Voices Project, a radio storytelling project exploring the prison system by highlighting the voices of those most impacted by prisons. The Prison Voices Project airs the first Wednesday of the month from 2 to 3 p.m. If you have feedback about the program that you have just heard, you can email feedback@wgxc.org. If you're interested in sharing your stories or ideas or in getting involved, you can write to us at The Prison Voices Project, 704 Columbia Street, 2nd floor, Hudson, New York, 12534.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say, say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart, remove all the bars that keep us apart. To be me, then you'd see and agree that every man should be free. I wish I could give all I'm longing to give. I wish I could live like I'm longing.